Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Everybody, welcome to the session. I'm your host, Justin Crosley. Haven't been back in the studio in a little while. I apologize, but I have to run a whole other company, which is a bar. And it's not fun to do that sometimes, so it's kept me out of the studio. But I'm really excited about my guest today. In fact, we've been trying to get a show together for a while, but they've been busy starting a brewery while I've been busy running the Hop Grenade. I've got Shred Beer Company in the studio with me today, and it's Amy Heller and Zach Frasher. You can go to shredbeercompany.com and get your own information, but you're going to hear it right from their mouths here on the session. Welcome to the studio, you two. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks, dude.
Yeah, we've been trying to do this for a while, and we're both just like, I don't know, that one might work, this one might work, and I'm glad we finally got it done. Fresh off of the World Beer Cup and Craft Brewers Conference, too, where you guys won a medal again.
Yeah.
Score.
Have you even been in business for 365 full days?
Nope.
You haven't, right?
No.
We're going to talk about that and your medal winning. So we've got a lot to do with Shred today and the amazing beer that they're making, which if you don't know, you're going to learn about it tonight. Thanks to our sponsor, More Beer. More Beer has been bringing you this show since June of 2005. That's how long we've been around. And they've just been a great partner for us. Go check out morebeer.com. They got a great YouTube page nowadays, putting out a lot of really good content there, and they're your go-to place for everything that you need. So go to morebeer.com and thank them for being a sponsor of the session. And then as we're going to jump into some of the World Beer Cup stuff too, I want to do some congratulations. I'm going to miss some people, so forgive me. I was in the back of the stage. I can't even see the audience streaming the awards, but I see all your faces come across my screen, and I want to congratulate Shred. Saw you guys win a gold medal with, what was the beer?
Microblaster.
Yes. Session IPA. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Did you win a GABF medal with that Session IPA too?
Won a bronze too.
Okay. Got it. And so now gold for that one. So congratulations to you. Congratulations to my dude Sully from the 21st Amendment. They took gold for 21st Amendment Lager.
Yeah.
That's a cool category to win, too.
Was that Mexican Lager? No, it
was there. So that's, El Sully is like my favorite beer that they make. But no, it wasn't even that.
Okay.
It was just straight up, I think, American Light Lager.
Oh, nice.
Or American lager, but it was the 21st Amendment lager that won
Sweet.
It.
Sweet.
Yeah. I'm so happy to see that. Ghost Town wins again with Nose Goblin.
Surprise, surprise, man. I mean, come on now.
So we have Ghost Town here all the time, and whenever, I don't take home a lot of beer from here. When Nose Goblin comes in, I take it home. I mean, that's such a great... is it a double? I think it's a double.
Double, yeah. Yes. It's like 9, I think, on the label. It's a big beer, yeah.
So they took home bronze for that, for the... I don't know how many years in a row they win a medal with that thing now. Okay, here's a cool one. Ism.
Oh,
our friend,
killed it.
Our friend Ian down at Ism, also in his first year of the new company, not a first year brewer, just like you two, but a first year brewery. I think he got a gold and a silver, and maybe a third one.
I think he got two golds
and a
bronze, maybe.
Oh
yeah,
my gosh.
But gold and West Coast IPA.
Oh, that's right, gold and West Coast IPA. That's the biggest category. Of all of them, I think.
I think this year, haze was just a little bit bigger.
Okay.
But they're so neck and neck. I mean, it was a mega category.
Right. That's a good win.
Score.
Right there.
Oh, totally, dude.
Also, gold. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the bronze. Don't get me wrong. But come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, good no, for
us. He's doing
well.
We're
really stoked for him.
Yeah. And then his former brewery, Rip, all friends, of course. I saw them win. My dude, he used to work here out at Bartlett Hall. You guys ever been to that little tiny brewery in San Francisco called Bartlett Hall?
I have not been there.
Nobody has. Don't worry. Nobody has. But this kid wins a medal every year. And he just flies under the radar. But he wins a medal in some sort of dark beer category like every... I think he's been doing it for like 6 years in a row.
Well, good for him.
Yeah. Okay. So I was happy to see him walk across the stage again. And then, of course, Faction.
Oh, man.
You got to be happy.
586, baby.
Yeah. So I think it's their second gold in a row at World Beer Cup, and then they won a silver or something at GABF, all for that same beer, which is probably my new favorite pale ale anyway.
It's a badass pale ale.
Named after a hop, right?
It's just single hop 586.
Okay.
Yeah, experimental. Still doesn't have a name, or it might be getting a name soon. I can't remember, but
like Roger, I think they should call it Roger. just fancy it up a little bit, like Roger.
I'll cut you, bitch.
Yeah. I mean, the other cool thing about Faction winning is that we don't have to deal with Roger when he loses, which is terrible. He's awful to be around when he loses.
I've seen both.
Yeah. But he's great to be around when he wins.
We after party with Roger till like 2 in the morning in Vegas. And so Roger was in good spirits. And Claudia, too.
Yeah. Yeah, Claudia, too.
Yep.
Yeah. And they're big. Roger's a deadhead and Claudia's a fish head. So the talk of the Craft Brewers Conference, of course, is that we were hoteled right across the street from the Sphere. And Fish was playing there all weekend. So they went and partied at Fish and then went to the conference. I think a lot of brewers did that same thing. So congratulations to everybody. And I did want to say just to the Brewers Association, and like they put on a great event. I know you guys just kind of flew in and flew out overnight, right?
24 hours, yeah.
Yeah, that's a trek. But it was a really good event. And you have your Vegas haters, and I think the Brewers Association was maybe worried about that. But what, like, suck it up. So I'm a desert kid. I love Vegas. I don't really want to be there for 5 days, but I love to go there. And you had your brewers being like, no, this is cool. This is one of the coolest conferences we've been to. And then we had your others going like, I don't know why we're in Vegas. I'm like, well, just enjoy yourself. And by the way, were the conferences and the lectures good? Yeah, no, they were all great. Okay.
What are you complaining about?
Yeah. So I think the Brewers Association did a great job. I'm not mad about them picking Las Vegas. It, you know, took a toll on us all a little bit because you got to go out and have a good time. But what Craft Brewers Conference doesn't, you know?
I mean, every year. I mean, we're always pickled, you know? It's a party.
Did you go to Nashville last year?
I didn't go last year because we were starting Shred.
Yeah.
And
I mean, too busy.
And that's kind of our... So we met in Nashville at CBC 6 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And so that would have been ceremonial for us to go for our anniversary, you know, last year. But we were busy passivating tanks and
makes sense.
Trying to get staff and like doing everything we could to get our business up and running. So we couldn't go, but
You're probably better for it, not because it wasn't a great conference, but honestly, it was harder not to party in Nashville than it was in Vegas. Like in Vegas, you kind of wanted to go back to your room a little bit, the bright lights, like the. But Nashville, you want to go out and see music.
Oh, dude.
Like Nashville it's calling so you. Much fun.
Yeah, I don't know if we even slept for like the 4 days we were, because we met in Nashville, and then we hooked up from Nashville on.
Okay, yeah.
So the party just kind of kept going.
Like 3 to 4 hours.
Let's just hang out. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Nashville's dangerous, man. Yeah. Awesome though.
Great town.
Yeah.
So, good job to the Brewers Association. You can go to the Brewing Network's YouTube page and watch the awards if you want. I was there streaming all the awards. Happy to see. Congratulations to everybody that won. And congratulations to the BA for putting on another great event. And next year, it's in Indianapolis, I think.
Yep. Yes.
I think I saw. A place I've never been. So, I love it when they move it around like that. It gives us all a chance to go someplace new. All right. Couple of other quick announcements. The 8th annual Livermore Valley Craft Beer Festival is coming up. It's Saturday, May 11th from 1 to 5. Back and bigger than ever in 2024, the Livermore Craft Beer Festival. It's, like I said, right around the corner. And it's the second year running that it'll be at the athletic field at Las Positas College out there in Livermore, which is the home of their beneficiary, the Las Positas College Fire Service Technology Program. You're going to see more than 40 NorCal breweries taking part with local food vendors, 5 great live bands, games, lots of shaded areas, and demonstrations by the firefighting students. Tickets are available now. They're on sale at the website, lvcbf.com/beer-festival, or just go search Livermore Valley Craft Beer Festival, either on Google or Facebook, and you'll find it. You can search it on Eventbrite, too, because that's where the tickets are. They're $25 if you want to be a designated driver. They're $55 for general admission and $85 for pre-sale VIP. And parking's always free. So the 2023 Livermore Craft Beers Festival, they've had a great success. Last year, they generated $20,000 for the fire program, which is aiding the scholarship fund and making way for our future firefighters. And they're hoping to raise even more in 2024. So get out your credit card. Go buy tickets. Just search Livermore Valley Craft Beer Festival online or on Facebook or on Eventbrite, and you'll find it. That's Livermore Valley Craft Beer Festival. Check them out. And if you want to support the Brewing Network, you know, just shop on Amazon by clicking the Amazon link on our page, or go to our sponsors, More Beer, Williams Brewing, Blickman, Beersmith. There's so many. You can go support them, and that's a great way of supporting us too. They've been with us for a long time. All right, Shred Beer Company. First, I got to find out about your history, because, like I kind of alluded to in the beginning, you guys are not new brewers. You've been brewing collectively for like over 20 years, I think, right?
Yeah.
That's about right.
Culmination together. Yeah.
Let's start with Amy, if you don't mind. You started as a winemaker, right? Or at least in the wine industry?
Yeah, I have my degree in enology.
Okay.
Was in the wine industry for quite a few years, doing the wine thing. I lived in Boonville doing wine in Napa.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
What was it like? I kind of think it'd be cool to live out there, but also really boring. What's Boonville like to live at?
I mean, it is very remote.
Yeah, it's way out there.
Yes.
But also close to the coast, you can kind of get to cool places.
It is. But at the same time, if you want to go to, you know, a regular grocery store, you're driving 35 minutes.
Okay, yeah.
So.
Okay.
I did love my time there, though.
Got it. So that was after school. You that was kind of your first stint in winemaking?
Yep.
Okay.
So basically, I got out of that industry because I'm from SoCal. My mom became very ill, so moved down there to help out the family. My oldest brother is special needs, so they desperately needed the help while my dad cared for her.
I see.
And I got picked up by a brewery. And
what brewery down there?
So that was Congregation. It was a little brew pub in Azusa.
Okay.
And
but you didn't really have beer experience at that point?
No.
Okay.
No, but I mean, going to school at Fresno State, I knew how to CIP a tank.
I knew
how to use pumps.
Yeah.
You know, which is a big deal.
Sure.
It really is.
Totally. Did you homebrew in college, though?
I did.
Okay.
So with wine, you get one shot a year because of the grapes, the harvest. So home brewing was our way of kind of fermenting things. So
okay.
That's where I got the start brewing, was back in 2005.
Got it. That's right when I started the Brewing Network.
Nice.
We've been doing this about the same amount of time.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so you did it, sounds like maybe just for kind of a job. You were maybe still into wine, but this beer opportunity just fell in your lap?
It did. And then it was really hard to get back into the wine industry once I left. So I kept on with the beer thing.
Got it.
And as a resume builder, I went through the American Brewers Guild, and that helped me get the job with Arrow Lodge.
Okay.
I commissioned that facility with them, and I was the head brewer there for 7.5 years.
Wow. So you went from your first brewing job to head brewer at your second brewing job.
Yep.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty awesome. And you chose to, it sounds like you were always into the education side, not side of it, but some of us do the path of like, I'm just going to go put my boots on and figure this out. But you wanted to, first with wine, and then once you got into brewing, you felt like you really needed to go to brewing school?
I felt that I was kind of stuck in this pub.
Okay.
That, you know, people weren't going to hire me because that was my only experience. So it was definitely a resume builder to do that.
Yeah.
For sure.
Was it, I hope you don't mind me asking this, but was at that point then, was shifting to beer like purely practical, like from a career perspective, or did you kind of start to love beer like you had wine?
No, I love it. I love it. So with wine, you're more of a steward of the vineyard. You try to get the best grapes possible and not fuck it up.
Yeah, okay.
And there's many ways to do that. With beer, you're more like a chef.
I see.
You get to pick what malt you want to use, what hops you want to use. You get to fiddle around with, oh, I don't like the way that turned out, so let's try something different.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't get to do that with wine.
Okay.
So, and with beer, you get to do it anytime you want.
Sure. So it felt like more expressive, like of your craft with beer.
Absolutely.
Plus, if you fuck it up, you just brew another one right away.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that's two breweries now. How long are you head brewer there at the one you built?
7.5 years.
All right.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, there a long time.
Got it. And what happens next?
Shred.
So from there to Shred.
Yes.
So you were living in San Diego until a year ago, basically?
LA,
okay.
So, no. I ended up moving, right before COVID. And I was still running the place remotely.
Mm-hmm.
I only had one brewer down there, so it was easy to hop on the phone with him. I do all the recipe development, all the, you know, cellar management.
Okay.
Just at home. And then once a month I would fly down there and spend 3 days and brew and check up on things and
I see.
Whatnot. So
okay. That's a pretty good gig.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
But so then you two had met, and do you right away start talking about maybe we'll be brewers together someday, or how did that? You guys can both chime in. We're still gonna go back to Zach's history, but
I mean, you know, it was always an idea, like talking back and forth, like it'd be so cool to do this together kind of thing. Because we were together, I don't know, we met in Nashville, and then we dated long distance while she was in L.A. for about 13, 14 months before I got her to get her to move up to NorCal.
I see.
So, I mean, you know, romancing the idea of like opening something together was always there, you know, pillow talk kind of thing. Like, was it realistic at the time? Not really. I mean, not for what it was, not what was happening.
Did you always want to open your own brewery, Zach? Or was that like, I could, if, as long as I'm making enough money, I can be a brewer for somebody else?
Without like fast forwarding or rewinding back and forth too much, I was co-owners of the last breweries I was at to some degree. So
okay.
We could go back and then go somewhere. But ultimately, me and Amy for Shred, it's 50-50. We have no investors, no partners. So it is really just our brewery 100%.
Got it.
Versus being a co-owner.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean.
That's nice.
I mean, totally.
It is so nice.
Right? You were already sort of answering to each other anyway. Yeah. So now you just answer to each other at the brewery. Nobody else.
Exactly.
Nobody else.
So you have that perk, but then, you know, you're taking all the responsibility. You got to deal with everything, you know, when it comes to taxes, employees, you know, things break. So
Right.
It's great in so many ways, but very challenging too.
It's a lot more work.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's for sure.
I'm sure we can commiserate on that and talk a lot about that. All right. So tell us about you, Zach. You start out as a homebrewer?
Yeah. Yeah. So humble beginnings, 2008 homebrewer. Okay. And then,
what else were you doing then? Did you have a job?
So 2008, odd jobs, whatever. Okay. I went to school for radiology tech and took a bunch of prereqs, and I was actually waiting to get into the program, Yuba City College. And the problem is you take all these prereqs, and then there's like a waiting list. So it was like a 3.5-year waiting list, right? So life just can change, in 3.5 years.
That's so long, yeah.
You're like, what do I do now? I went to school, and I worked odd jobs, and I'm just going to keep working odd jobs. So for 3.5 years. I fell in love with making beer, like home brewing. My daughter, my first daughter, was born, and I was a stay-at-home dad for a while back then, and I was just trying to kind of find hobbies and stuff to do, and I came across a magazine or an article, and it was on like home brewing, and I thought it was like the coolest thing ever. I'm like, oh, you can make your own beer at home. This is rad.
Yeah.
I'm just going to like totally go down the rabbit hole with this, right? And so like I'm listening to the BN, and I'm like on like the Homebrew Talk forums, and I'm just doing all this stuff back then, like 2008, right? Like going for it. And then brewed, homebrew. And then I got into the Rad Tech program finally, and I realized how much I was like not into radiology anymore.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, this is like, I don't know.
No, that's
remember
a paycheck job, right? Like, that's just to make some cash.
Totally.
Yeah.
And then around the same time that I got into that program, I was talking to the guys from Knee Deep at the time. So it was like Jeremy Warren and Jeb, I think, was the first brewer there.
Okay, yeah.
And I think he just started. And I was kind of knocking on the door, hey, you guys need a hand. Like, let me kind of come in and brew with you guys. And they were like, oh, yeah, come in. Like, hang out. Come, you can keg off some beer. You can help on bottling day. And then that kind of evolved into, like, CIPing tanks and brewing. And
nice.
So that was kind of like my entry internship there. Not even as an official employee, but I was there for 9 months.
Okay.
And did a ton of stuff there. Enough for me to learn what it was like to be an industrial brewer versus a home brewer. Because they are different worlds for sure.
Absolutely. That's a good distinction to make. Like, obviously you can transition, but they're different worlds.
Big time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, big time.
Okay.
So, I did stuff with them. They let me brew my own recipe beer there. It was a beer that I did like a first round NHC with too. It was like double IPA, first round NHC, gold. And so it was cool. It was like a fun time as kind of a home brewer, kind of tapping into commercial and just learning so much about that side of things.
Yeah.
And then I ultimately ended up dropping out of the radiology tech program. I just was not in love with it, and I didn't want to do it.
Sure.
But at the same time, I had some things happening in life, and I couldn't work at Knee Deep because they said, hey, do you want to actually work here? And I was commuting from Grass Valley to Lincoln because they were at the old Beerman's facility at the time.
That's a good little trek. What's that, an hour?
It's about
or
an
so?
Hour.
Yeah.
And I just had too much going on, and so I couldn't actually work there. And so I kind of like was like kind of like a bum for like a little while. Like,
okay.
I just like was
fair enough.
Like, whatever, like living off some cash I had and trying to figure out what I was doing up in Grass Valley. And then I ended up moving to Sacramento. And I worked at a homebrew shop, the Brewmeister in Roseville.
Oh yeah.
For a while. So I was there for like 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah. What's that dude's name?
Eric.
Yeah. Eric. Yeah,
Eric. He's a good dude.
He's a great dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He gave me a job when I was, super passionate about being, becoming into this industry more at the time.
Yeah.
And just being a brewer and still kind of like a home brewer at heart. I really felt like I wanted to fine tune my own personal skills, even though I knew the industrial stuff. I wanted to kind of get in touch with like making my own beer a certain way. And so worked there for 3 years, put in a nice stint there, and homebrew shops, to me anyway, is almost like grad school for like making beer, like raw materials and ingredients. You learn so much about
that. Makes sense.
What does Vienna malt do in a beer, with like 100% Simcoe or something,
right.
I was knocking out these smash beers over and over again and taking, water profiles to extreme, something that you could do on the professional scale, but you know, the consumers might not be receptive to those like experimental things, you know.
And even doing it just as a home brewer who's not working at the shop, it's expensive and time consuming to do as your hobby to get through that many ingredients, that many processes, that many trials. But if it's sort of half your job and you're talking to homebrewers all day about it, that's like a fast track of getting through that stuff.
Oh, totally. So you almost have to be like a consultant for these people, because they come right in and go, well, what's this off flavor in my beer? I don't know why this tastes like shit.
Yeah.
Like, well, I don't know either, but I'm going to figure it out for you because
nice, yeah,
it's part of my job, I guess.
So, right.
But totally, like fast track, you learn so much about just beer in general in that position. And that was great. That was a great opportunity. But, you know, as like life evolved, it did get kind of stagnant after a while.
Okay.
And so I ended up getting a job with Mike Meraz at Meraz Brewing Company.
Oh, yeah.
Back in 2014. So, yeah, Knee Deep was 2011, Meraz 2014.
Okay.
And then
it's right when we opened the Hop Grenade, too.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
back when
10 years ago.
Yeah, back when Meraz was nice and would, like, bring us beer. Fuck that guy now. You hear me, Mike. I'm talking to you.
Oh, no.
Where's your beer, bro?
It's back when Mixed Firm was amazing, bro.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so you worked there for a while. So that now you're learning about wild beer.
Totally.
Yeah.
So totally different wheelhouse, because I felt like I had hoppy beer in a good spectrum of what I wanted to do. And, you know, being at Knee Deep and like mega hoppy powerhouse, you know, and
yeah,
just I felt like I had a good grasp on that. And then worked with Mike, and he's showing me all the stuff with Mixed Firm that was so new to me at the time, you know, and put in time there, and that was awesome. Mike was a great guy to work with. And
yeah,
work
yeah,
for, and
he is a good guy
and a fun brewery to work at the time. I mean, that was like, you know. I remember like Tim Clifford from, you know, when he's at Santa Darius coming over and having lunch and just like drinking a bunch of Bernice and just talking about life and shit. You know, it was rad. It was good times.
Absolutely.
So I'm working at the Brewmeister and Meraz same time in tandem.
Okay.
Six, 7 days a week, just grinding. You know, I'm just like, you know, brain's just absorbing with beer knowledge at this point, right? I'm just trying to.
Sure.
But
you were a bum before that anyway, so you might as well work your ass off.
Basically homeless.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then, you know, I'm at the Brewmeister, and I was communicating with the guys from Moonraker.
Okay.
They were the guy, the owner, he wanted to open Moonraker. It wasn't developed yet. And we were communicating, and he was just pilot brewing beer, apparently.
Okay.
Nothing crazy. I think he was just trying to figure out, like, how beer was made.
All right.
And so they approached me and said, hey, we're going to open a brewery, and we're looking to hire a head brewer. Like, you know, do you have any interest in it? And I'm like, well, I'm just this, like, whatever, you know, guy from the homebrew shop, and I have some experience at these other breweries, but yeah, sure, you know.
Yeah.
So they invited.
He must have tasted your beer. I mean, let's be honest. Like, I'm with you so far. You're like, well, I'm just whatever. But you're probably a little bit like me, and you're like, fuck it, I'll take on anything. I'll take it on. But to offer you that job, they must have tasted your homebrew or something.
So I'll say I missed a little chunk here.
Okay.
I did win a Best in Show at the State Fair for Session IPA of all beers.
Which you still do. Yeah, okay. That's your jam.
And they saw that, and they were like, oh, you want it when you're, you know, homebrewing Brewmeister, you know, Session IPA.
And that was enough.
And they're like, oh, cool. Do you want to talk more?
Okay.
And so I'm like, yeah, totally. You know, this was about 10 years ago. And so I brought them some beer to try. And I felt that my homebrew at that time, from my commercial experience, was probably more superior than a lot of other homebrews out there. There was some really good homebrewers out there, too. I mean, probably the same names we could rattle off back and forth, and a lot of bad homebrew, too.
Yeah.
But I brought them some beer, and I don't know how collective their knowledge was at the time of good or bad homebrew, but they seemed very impressed by it.
Okay, yeah.
Enough to where we had a few different conversations, and I toured their empty warehouse facility, and they offered me a head brewer position to commission the whole facility for them.
Wow, nice.
Which I was like, I feel like potentially underqualified for this.
Yeah, you had never built a brewery.
No, never.
Fake it till you make it, bro. Fake it till you make it. Totally. You're like, I got this.
Yeah.
Google, how do you build a brewery?
Totally. And there was other commercial brewers I talked to at the time that did the same thing. And I was like, oh, you've done this too. So I talked to them about it. Or just even like Mike Mraz, man. Like he was a home brewer and himself, you know.
Yeah.
So those tools are there. It's just, you know, how much tenacity do you have to really go through all this? And so, you know, I took the position, you know, based off, you know, that this could be my gateway to kind of build myself. And I felt like I had some tricks in my back pocket with IPAs that other people weren't doing at the time yet.
Sure.
Basically like hazy IPA.
Yeah.
And just like West Coast IPA, maybe a little different. And so went in, got to work, commissioned the facility, went through everything. I mean, learned so much going through, like, this is how you commission a glycol chiller. This is how you commission a brew house. You know, I've never passivated equipment, but this is how you passivate equipment. You know, I just went through every single detail. I mean, I was soldering copper and you know, completing the glycol lines.
Wow.
Doing
yeah.
every single component with a crew of a couple other guys that had zero experience too.
Right.
So
this is only half a joke, but YouTube, right? Like when you had to solder some shit and you didn't know how, you'd go to YouTube or something.
Totally.
Like that's, I said it's only half a joke. Like when I don't know how to do things around here, the hot grenade or on my car, it's YouTube, right?
YouTube and forums and whatever information you could find.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, there was a couple other guys there, but they weren't contractors.
Okay.
You know, they worked for a sub company that worked with. So it was a solar company that was attached to Moonraker.
I see.
And so these guys, you know, they never built a brewery either. They didn't.
But they knew some stuff.
Some stuff.
Yeah.
You know, some construction stuff.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
contractors, but some construction and build out. You know, kind of stuff. So, but you know, we went in and just kind of and tore it up in a good amount of time too.
Amazing.
And, you know, I was like pilot brewing at the time still, so home brewing still.
Yeah.
But like I'm testing all these beers and get things really dialed in. And then it's like, now we're brewing beer. And that opportunity was one of the most valuable opportunities I've ever had in my life in this industry, because it was on the fast track on how to not just brew, but like manage a facility.
Right.
And then it went so quick, was like, okay, we started with 210s and 220 barrel fermenters, and we were adding a 30 every month.
You guys were instant success. I remember, I didn't know you, but I knew Moonraker.
Sure.
Yeah. Instant success.
Yeah. It was so fast. And it was just me and my assistant brewer. It was like a skeleton crew of nothing. And then it went from, you know, me and him just rocking and rolling shift brewing to now we're going to bring in another brewer and a sales guy and a cellar guy. And then it was just, you know, it evolves, you know,
it's
just
like
production brewery. But I watched it happen overnight, which was crazy. And yeah, we did have some very nice success within our first year, JBF Metal and Rape Beer at the time when Rape Beer was a thing and Bistro, you know, triple IPA gold, you know. It was awesome. It was crazy, you know?
Right. And you were there for how long then?
4 years.
4 years. Okay. Yep. Got it.
So
yeah, that's a success story. And you said earlier you were a partner in that brewery too.
Sure. Yep. Yeah. I was a small, shareholder.
Nice.
So, I didn't walk away with, astronomical amount of money, but I did walk away with some cash.
Oh, that's
so
good.
It was good. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I want to keep going, but before I finish my Pilsner, because it's so good and it's almost gone, I wanted to make sure we talk about this. So we're drinking Shred Pilsner, which is not the name. What's the name of it?
Mad Skills Pils.
The Mad Skills Pils. I just want you to tell me about it a little bit, because to me it's kind of the smack in between a Helles and a Pilsner, right? So it has some sweetness of a Helles, but not the full bitterness of a Pilsner either. Like, to me, it lands somewhere in the middle. I don't know if you designed that, but how would you describe the beer? What were you going for?
Yeah, totally. This is Amy's beer.
Okay.
So, why don't you...
Yeah, Amy, tell me about it.
Take it away a little bit.
It's delicious, is my point also.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
So, first Pils at Shred. So, definitely dialing in the system for a Pilsner.
Okay.
If I brewed it again, I'd probably up the bitterness a little bit.
Yeah, okay.
But
I could see that.
I think it turned out great.
It is. It's nice and dry.
Yes.
By the way, I love a Helles and a Pilsner, so I have no problem putting those two things together. Is it a single base malt? Is it just Pilsner malt?
So it's Weyermann Extra Pale Pils, EPP, like we like to say, and a sack of Carafoam.
Okay. And hops? Noble or no?
All middle fruit.
Middle fruit. I like that. I like the single. So that's a very traditional approach. A single German hop all the way through of it, right?
Yes.
I think we did have to use a little bit of Warrior for bittering because our middle fruit was super light.
Okay. So you're right.
That's
so
fair. Bittering's okay.
Bit at 60 of Warrior.
We had to get a little bit of charge in there.
Okay. All right.
And then, yeast is Augustiner
from Imperial.
That might be why I like it so much, too.
Love Augustiner.
I have a fresh Augustiner in my fridge right now. My German friends just had visited me a couple weeks ago, right after the beer fest, actually. So saving that up for a good little fresh, refreshing day.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Did you guys have to fuck with your water a lot up there?
Soft.
Our water is so nice.
Yeah, beautiful
Water. Well,
compared to what I was dealing with in LA, this is like RO water. It's amazing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you didn't worry about this at all.
Build it up as we want.
Okay. So, yeah. And no dry hop in this either.
No.
Just straight through. Okay. 30 minute, 10 minute. Is it fully traditional? Like you got to do 60, 30, 10. Are you doing that?
No, not that much. So there was a 60. There was, I believe, a 15 and then a Whirlpool.
Whirlpool, okay.
Yeah.
And you're not worried about decoction or anything like that?
No.
Our system actually does have the capability to do decoction.
Is that right?
It's a steam brew house, and there's steam pipes going to the mash tun.
Okay.
We've been so busy.
I was going to say you have enough to do.
really long days, and I don't know how much longer I can do with a decoction or a double decoction or something.
Would you like to brew this pills in 4 hours or 12? How are you feeling today? Well, it's delicious. I just want to make sure we talk about it before it got too warm and gone from my glass, by the way. Yeah, that's a great, great beer. And is that your first lager out of the brewery, too, or just first pills?
Oh, no. Just the first pills.
Just first pills. Okay.
Yeah. So we did our first lager, batch number... Well, I think batch number 8, I think, because I was going back to the brew logs. Batch number 8 was Cinco.
Okay.
Mexican lager.
Nice.
Silver Medal GABF.
Oh, hell
last
yeah.
Last year.
Yeah. And probably not just where you are, that's a popular beer style now too, but I'm going to also add to where you are up there. That beer probably sold out like that.
It's awesome.
Super popular.
It does great, yeah. We went for and did a 30-barrel batch, and it did really well for us for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, quick, and it's actually getting canned next week too for Cinco, baby.
Nice. Okay, I'm going to get us to a break here in a minute, but first, so you're four years at Moonraker,
yep,
and then you go to Slice, right?
Yep.
And
so
were you like headhunted? I'm just curious. Were they like, we love your beer? Would you please come to Slice? Or I don't know how that happened.
I mean, yeah, a little bit,
Okay,
not gonna lie.
So that's, I mean, because you're making great beer. I don't see why you wouldn't be. I don't see why any brewer might be like, hey, we need this guy.
Owners of Slice, and when I was a co-owner, we were friends, and yeah, there was a lot of conversations.
Okay, nice.
But I will say I was very loyal to Moonraker.
Yeah. Well, like you said, it was like the biggest opportunity you'd ever had.
Totally.
Yeah.
And things were going groovy. I mean, that'd be tough just to walk away from.
Sure.
So,
okay. So that was you had to really think on that one. To leave
I think so. Yeah, there was definitely some, I think, towards the end of Moonraker, just maybe we were seeing things in a different light because, so, you know, I put in this 10-barrel brew system, right, commissioned it and you know, trained and motivated the staff and, you know, did all these things. And then I put in a 20-barrel brew system down the street, too, commissioned that. And to me, that was the time when I started personally getting maybe a little demotivated.
I see.
Because I just, you know, I could see that maybe the owners had a different idea of production and the direction they wanted to go.
Yeah.
Versus the way I wanted to go. And I was having so much fun with that 10 and just the beers and the way they were coming out, and I had my hands on everything. And when I did the 20, it was fun. It was cool, you know, right? Another good experience learning.
Yeah.
But it was just so fast, so much work, you know, and then doing them both at the same time. And we were taking yeast from each facility back and forth. Like, we would literally brink yeast and put it in the back of my truck, right? And then I'd take it down and go pitch it while someone else is making wort. It just,
that's
things were
awesome.
Just, they were getting wild, you know, and it was fun, right?
Yeah.
Intense, good learning again. But I was not in love with that kind of program.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know what was going to happen foreseeably with the quality of the beer.
Okay.
Is the way I felt. I thought that maybe things might be going in a direction that I was not feeling, even though that same year we won a JBF for West Coast Double IPA.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So,
right. So it sounds like you didn't want some massive brewery. You didn't want to be in charge of a factory.
Right.
You wanted to be in charge of a brewery that you had your hands on.
Exactly. A little more control.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yep.
So you go to Slice. How long are you there?
4 years, too.
Four years. Yeah. Okay. Which brings us to the present day.
Yeah.
When the two of you, and we're going to take a break before we dive into it, but the present day basically is the two of you decide, hey, remember that thing we've been talking about? We're going to go for it. Does that sound about right?
Absolutely.
That's about right. Yep.
All right. Let's do this. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to find out how Shred got started. Hang in there. You're listening to The Session. We'll be right back.
The leader in affordable, high-quality kegerators is here. Introducing Komos, the kegerator designed with serious beer drinkers in mind. It features an all-stainless steel draft tower, a major upgrade over traditional chrome-plated brass towers, and Komos keeps your new tower cold with their air-cooled tower fan, wrapping your beer lines in frigid coolness. Your beer is poured from innovative forward-sealing faucets that don't leak, so they stay cleaner for longer. Dual gas inlets on the rear of the fridge allow you to run both CO2 and nitrogen gas. Serve your beer with CO2, serve your kegged wine or even cocktails with nitrogen. The digital temperature display has the largest range available, allowing you to use the Komos Kegerator for fermentation if you need to. And now Komos Kegerators ship with duo-tight draft fittings for that click-to-connect assembly we've all dreamed of. Buy direct from KomosDraft.com and receive free shipping on your order. That's KomosDraft.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back to The Session. Thanks for hanging out with us today. We are still with Shred Beer Company, Amy Heller and Zach Frasher, drinking beer, talking beer, drinking really good beer, I should say, all the way through. We might have to do more segments than planned just to get through all the beer, because I kind of refuse to not drink the beer. Even though we can drink it afterward, people want to know. So we'll just keep doing segments as long as we have to. So where we left off is now we're in the almost present day. We're in 2023 sometime when you guys decide to open Shred. But before this open date, I just kind of want to talk about, if you don't mind, and you can be as personal or not as you want to, but to make the decision to open a beer company, you said you don't have any investors, it's just you two. It's kind of a bold move. And it's a bold move the entire time I've been in the craft beer industry. But in 2023, I think it's kind of an even bolder one. I think there are breweries closing. The sales are not the epic percentages of growth that we used to experience. So I just kind of want to know where your guys' head was at, where you sat down and said, this is the time to do it, and how you made that decision, if we could talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, I think we just, you know, we were just romancing this idea forever to do our own thing. And I don't know. I think we just wanted to be our own bosses and do things our way and not have other people. I think we had really good jobs in this industry, right? We worked with some really good people, or worked for very good people, whatever you want to call it. But yeah. I think ultimately we just wanted to kind of create our own vision or our own destiny, our own dream of making beer a certain way without having anybody else involved, I guess.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Because we were, I mean, at least I was, and I'm sure she was too, and maybe even collectively, we were approached by other investors and partners for other projects along the way.
Okay.
You know, hey, do you want to open a brewery? And hey, do you want to do this? And I got a lot of money and a lot of dollars, which is it's nice. You know, it's kind of dangling a carrot. Hey, you know, I can take care of you because I have all this money if you take care of me, kind of thing.
Sure.
But, you know, you got to like maybe deal with these people, you know, that you don't know sometimes. And it's like,
right,
maybe this isn't going to be a good long term plan. And for me and her, because we're together and we have kids together and not together, it's just a better, maybe long term sustainable plan for our future. And I think that was our idea. We kind of want to build like our own family kind of culture. Sure. Brewery.
It's hard to stick to that. So I commend you for doing that, because just like you said, if someone's dangling a bunch of, especially in this industry, dangling a bunch of money in front of you, it's an expensive endeavor to start a brewery. So you can easily be swayed, I think. And I think a lot of people are. I think I know brewers who... I don't want to name names, I guess, although even though I don't think he'd mind. There's a really great brewery in Sacramento that brewer has been in the industry for so long and been through iterations where like, okay, let's do the money thing, let's do this. And now he has his own brewery and I think he's happy as fuck. So,
sure.
So yeah. I think, but I'm just saying, I kind of commend you for holding to your guns there.
Yeah, it's tough too, because I was co-owners of these other breweries and I had pretty good equity, you know.
Yeah.
It's really tough to walk away from that.
Sure.
Especially when there's like friends involved and things like that. But I think it was more or less we just wanted full control
and 100%. Do it your way.
We answer to
full
ourselves.
Control. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where I don't even have to think about talking to anybody about a decision that I want to make or we want to make together.
Yeah.
And we're pretty harmonious for the most part on those kind of business decisions, I think.
But you guys hadn't been brewers together yet, right? I mean, conceptually, maybe.
No.
I'm sure you always talked about beer together and shared ideas, right?
Sure. Pillow talk, you know? Just, yeah. You
know. Yeah. Say hops again. did the climate of the industry, did this sort of downturn like worry you guys at all? Because like I said, 2023 is a ballsy move.
You know, it's a really weird year. I don't know if I've ever dealt with a year that was so inconsistent, because Moonraker, for me, you know, like when I started Moonraker, we had the haze craze thing going on.
Sure.
And it was just, it was like this powerhouse, right? It was like you couldn't turn it off. And it just, there's so much success going on at the time. And then going to Slice, similar because of COVID, and COVID was almost a blessing, because I thought, oh, this is it. You know, COVID's going to happen. We're going to close our doors and it's going to be this like problem.
Yeah.
And it was the opposite, is people were thirsty. Yeah, and people
did very well.
People wanted to take home beer. So I was brewing alone at the time.
Okay.
Solo brewer. And, you know, we're canning twice a week and pallets were disappearing every release.
Amazing.
We were selling out on weekends. Because people are at home and on lockdown and they had nothing to do.
Yeah.
It was like a hobby, you know, and people were statistically drinking more during COVID. And so I saw these different surges. I don't know if it was like I was blind in my mind that around 2023, I'm like, oh yeah, we're gonna have lines of people again, just like Moonraker and Slice. And I'm like, wait, no, this market is not like this anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
So very challenging.
But it didn't faze you too much about starting. You were like, no, it's going to be fine. We're going to have these lines out the door. Which is, I think, probably a good thing, because you don't want too much doubt when you're starting a very expensive endeavor. Sometimes you just got to jump in the deep end.
Well, and we knew that we make a good product.
Yeah, okay.
You know, that's...
And the proof, and you had proof of that, you know, over and over.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes. I think the idea was that it's not like me and, you know, another person opening this business together that's just a business person. She's a brewer by design, too, and I'm a brewer. So at the end of the day, if we lost all of our staff, let's just say we lost everybody for some crazy reason, we could still make a good quality product, me and her.
Yep.
And run the business efficiently, like what we're doing right now.
Nice.
No matter what, which a lot of people can't say that in this industry that, you know, hey, oh, I lose my brewer, I don't know how to make beer. Or yeah. I lose my other investor partner, I'm out of money. It was more or less, hey, we're gonna do this, we're gonna take out a loan, we're gonna do it the way we wanna do it.
Yeah.
And okay. no matter what, if we lose all of our soldiers, we can still stand up and make the beer.
I like that.
And produce, you know, if we need to.
Yeah.
So it's not a lucrative, sustainable plan long term, but we could.
Right.
And so
it's a fail safe, really.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
While other people, man, they just scramble and they get paranoid when they lose their head brewer or they lose mm-hmm. somebody involved in their business, you know.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, my GM just left. I've been shitting my pants for 2 months. Trying to figure this out. We'll talk more on that later. That's a nice model. Like, it's a good fail safe to have. You guys are confident that no matter what, collectively we have the skills to do this. I'm surprised you got a loan. Not because of you. It's nothing personal. Yep. But banks were still giving out loans for breweries?
We had to jump through some.
It was challenging.
Okay.
But I think there's some credibility from my past track record of what I've done.
Nice.
And, you know, I had some income, too. We had some money to put in.
Okay.
You know. Which just bled the bank account. But
was
still.
It a small bank? I'll tell you why I'm asking in a second.
Yeah.
Like a small neighborhood bank, or was it like a chain bank that you guys?
Live Oak.
It's Live Oak.
Okay, Live Oak. So Live Oak's like they like breweries. The reason I ask you that is so many banks. You said, well, I have a track record, and they liked that. So many banks just didn't give a shit. They look right through you. Oh, you're a human? Sorry, I didn't notice. Like, that's most banks. But the smaller banks, and I've interviewed a couple people like that who say, in fact, Mare Island Brewing Company, right over, right across the water here. They're like, make a relationship with a small bank and you'll do much better. And Live Oak is not tiny, but they are a small bank and they're big on breweries.
They're big on breweries, and I think initially when we approached them, they were more bigger on, is this an existing brewery already? And we'll float you more for your success that you already have.
I see.
And I said, no, we're not existing, but I am existing and she's existing.
Right.
And we do have this like track record, and let me sell this to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so they wanted kind of, well, tell me about yourself and let's have some meetings and,
nice.
And tell me about what you've done. And luckily, one of the guys that funded it, or he wasn't the guy that funded it, but he was instrumental in funding it.
Yeah.
He funded other breweries that we know.
Yeah.
And it was a beer guy, and he spoke the language and said, I can get this worked out for you guys because I can tell there's some tenacity in what you guys want to do.
Yeah.
And you've already done it. Here's your portfolio from both you guys, and you know, I'm going to make this work for you as long as you jump through all these hoops, which it's a lot of hoops for an SBA loan.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And so we did do it. And
I'm sorry I'm harping on this, but that's refreshing to hear for me because it's so often that it just feels nowadays that nothing has a face and nothing has a story. None of that matters. Show me the numbers. Show me the math, which I'm sure you had to do too.
Oh, yeah.
But those are all that mattered. When we were looking to do a second Hop Grenade location, which maybe they were right because it failed, but when we were looking to do that, we were kicking ass here. But we had a story. And people were saying no. And I was like, well, why don't you let me tell you the story of the Brewing Network and how it started in my garage. And now we've built this thing and we're making, you know, we're making some real money at the... And no one cared. It was just like I said, they just like look right through me. There was no story that mattered. So to me, this is very refreshing that a bank let you say, hey, don't worry that there's not a building yet. Let me tell you who we are. I love that.
Yeah. They were cool. They were accommodating.
Yeah.
It took a lot of time and energy back and forth with phone calls and
sure.
and trying to see if we could get any kind of approval, and then providing documentation. They wanted a 5-year business plan through and through. And it, I mean, it was a lot
right.
for sure. So,
but then so you guys did move in to an existing brewery, right?
Correct.
Yes. Yep.
What was that brewery, if you don't mind?
It was Out of Bounds Brewing Company.
In Rockland.
In Rockland, yep.
Okay. So they had gone out of business, Out of Bounds.
They were going out of business.
Oh, they were going. Right. So they were still going.
They were still going. Yeah, before we bought the assets.
How did you find them? Was it up for sale somewhere?
It was up for sale. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was listed on a broker website that they were trying to sell.
Got it.
And
they're just like, yeah, you can take everything. Take the whole bill. It was the whole kit and caboodle.
So they didn't own the building, but but it was an asset acquisition. So they had a listing price, and then we showed interest through the broker, and there was negotiation back and forth.
Okay,
and then we went back and forth because we didn't think that the listing price they had, based off their equipment that was depreciated, was worth what it was worth.
Okay, how old was it, the brewery or the equipment?
About 10 years.
Okay. It looks, by the way, I don't know shit, but it looks gorgeous. I've been there a couple times now, and so they took good care of it, I think.
Well, we had to put a lot of love into that place, let me tell you.
Okay, so, fair.
So good bones, right? Good
bones.
Okay,
there we go.
Yeah, good bones, but, you know, deep underneath, they need some serious TLC.
Okay.
Yeah. But the people, you know, the first brewer and the owners, you know, they put in some really nice stuff there. You know, it was a group of doctors, anesthesiologists. So they put in really nice equipment. They had money. They wanted to fulfill their dream at the time, 10 plus years ago, right?
Okay,
they wanted
nice.
To put in this nice equipment and put in this facility. And they did a really good job with doing that. I think what happened was towards the end, they probably checked out. They have a restaurant, too.
I see.
That they were feeding their beer to, so a satellite location. But I think they checked out ultimately. Just my observation.
Your interpretation. Yeah.
Because based off, you know, the equipment uptake and you know, the conditioning of the facility, it needs some serious TLC. And to us as brewers, things weren't really being done maybe the right way towards the end. So
had you, just out of curiosity, so now you're negotiating based on all of that, all of your knowledge. Had you already been approved by the bank, or was it not until you found a place and said, hey, we found a place, will you do it?
Yeah, so with SBA loans, they'll get you to the ninth inning.
Okay.
And until you actually get an agreement going, they won't fulfill the loan 100%.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. Unless you're doing a startup from scratch and you can show, hey, here's what we're paying with our contractor, and here's what we're paying with this, and they're in the building, or we own the building, or we're paying a lease on the building. They want so much documentation, but they won't fulfill your loan 100% until you have an agreement basically set in place.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Well,
so you went through that, and you take possession of the building, what, June of 2023 or so?
That's when we opened in June.
Oh, you opened? Okay.
We opened.
We got the keys at the end of the first week of May.
We got the keys in May, yeah.
And opened in June.
Crazy, right?
That is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And you had to do a bunch of work to the place, you're saying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Tasting room also, because it has a beautiful tasting room.
Tasting room was pretty dialed in. We put some paint on the wall.
I resealed the floors.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we changed the beer menu, the board. Yeah, we did the floors, paint.
Tasting room was easy compared to the brew house.
We put probably total, what do you think, like 15 to 20K in the tasting room? Nothing crazy.
Okay.
Put another 50K on the production side with just mechanical failures of things that were...
I see.
That we didn't catch. So what, you know, when you go through... purchasing something like this, you go through like a due diligence.
Sure.
And they make you know, you walk through, you get 45 days to kind of inspect and figure out if there's anything wrong with anything. And technically, the owner should be paying for it before you purchase it.
Yeah.
But there's only so much you can do on the brewing side when you're not brewing beer, right? So
that was kind of my next question. Do you go in on a brew day and see how things are working, or is that not okay?
Well, we went in on one brew day, but you know, not all brewers are created equal, right? So we don't know what someone's doing in a different way. But, I mean, for us, it was more or less, hey, does the forklift turn on? Does it raise the forks up and down? Does it does it tilt? Does it, you know, cool, that works. Check it off the box.
Yeah.
You know, does the air compressor turn on? Cool. Does it blow air? Cool. Check it off the box.
I see.
Until you go in and you're like, oh, these things weren't done or done maintenance on or manicured correctly.
Right.
And then all of a sudden they start breaking. That's when you start realizing, oh, you guys didn't service this or service that. So
sorry for the white trash analogy, but I am white trash. And it's like buying a used RV. Everything looks shiny and new, and then you drive it down the road. And the water heater breaks, and the roof is leaking, and the you name it. Yeah, yeah. But you must have had some confidence. Of course, it's not going to save you any... It doesn't mean you have to pay for it. But you've already built both of you have already built a couple breweries. So you must have had confidence that, like, hey, we've done our due diligence. If it breaks, we'll fix it. Like, we know how to fix it. Because me, I wouldn't know how to fix it. I might want have a dream of buying a brewery, but now every time it breaks, I'm freaking out and I'm calling somebody. But you guys must have had some confidence that, like, whatever breaks, we've done this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
There was things that we kind of looked at and knew that didn't have longevity maybe on them and still don't. But they're maintainable. And yeah. I think that we can make a lot of it still work. And they are working, obviously. But like my first comment, good bones.
Yeah.
And there is a thing that I believe is like time is money. And so, you know, if we would have done this from the ground up and found a building and try to like put in our own drains and get permitting with whatever city we're in, yeah,
waiting on
and
the permits alone.
You know, anchor
you
tanks
still
in.
Wouldn't be open.
No, we
still would not
not
be open.
Yeah, yeah. No yeah. way.
Yep.
And so
not nowadays, no way
no
you'd still
way.
Be open.
You know, and so we were open. You know, it was about 4 months.
That's amazing.
You know, it was. And I mean, we had to do, you know, TTB. We had to do ABC license transfer stuff with the city. I mean, really. And then kind of go in and do commissioning on all the equipment, which was filthy and did need some work. But
okay. It looks great now, I'll tell you that.
Totally. But, yeah. I mean, the facility and all, if we didn't feel warm and fuzzy about it, we wouldn't have done it.
Sure,
you know?
Okay.
So it was good enough to the point that we felt that we could get in there and operate. So
when you brew your first beer... I'm sure everything didn't go perfect. That's not my question. But was there ever like a, oh, shit moment? Like, oh, no. Like, I don't know if this is going to work. Because, you know, I mean, you guys are great brewers, so you probably figured it out pretty quick. But I don't know. Like, again, buying a used RV or something, you kind of get there and you're like,
it was more cussing at the former people for how the fuck were you making beer with a Carbstone that's like...
How do you guys even carbonate beer? How do you push CO2?
Unbelievable.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we knew how to fix it.
Right. Okay. So there wasn't any real, like, oh, shit. Like, buyer's remorse, I think is what I'm trying to say. There was none of that.
There was no, like, lemon moment. Or okay. Like, oh, we bought a lemon. Like, we're done. We can't make beer on this. It was more like... what were these people doing?
Yeah.
Initially. And then...
Damn it, we have to fix it now?
Yeah. Well,
yeah, right.
I'll say this. Coming in there, I went in and looked at all the tanks, did my own inspection, right? So I'm inspecting every tank. And everything looks okay, like clean enough, but there's like a weird smell to everything. I'm like, this all smells like fucking beer still. Why does it smell like beer? And I talked to the ex-guy that was there, and I go, you CIP all these tanks? You know, you passivate these? Well, we don't passivate them. We passivate them a long time ago, but we CIP them. And I go, why? What's that smell going on? I don't know, whatever. So I go up on top of all the tanks, and I realize they left all the lids on top of the tank. So the 4-inch ports, the PRVs, and the spray balls, they never took them off.
Okay.
Meaning if you had a blow off on a tank, think if you have like put in the homebrew analogy, like a carboy or something, and it blows off on your bung or whatever.
Yeah.
And there's just shit everywhere.
Yeah.
You take it off and you clean it, right? They never took these components off the top of the tanks. So everything I took off the top was just caked with however many years of hop blow off.
Oh.
And shit was on top of all of them. I'm like, oh, that's that beer smell. You got cheesy old beer that's been sitting on top of those tanks for I don't know how many years. Old seals and gaskets. And then I repassivated the whole brew house.
Can you tell me what that is? Please tell my listeners and me what passivating is.
Yes. So we'll run a full CIP, which is just, you know, a caustic cycle, just to clean. But then we use nitric acid, and it's usually a nitric phosphoric blend at a high dosing rate. And we'll run a loop on that, too.
Okay.
And nitric acid is going to polish your stainless steel, and which you should be doing on all your 304 stainless continually.
I see. Like after every batch?
You don't have to do it after every batch, but we do it after every tank, after every CIP.
I see.
Not every brewery does that, but it's something that we do. We do it on the heat exchanger. We do it on every tank. We do it on the mash tun, kettle.
Got it. Yeah, I think I had this impression, like the former brewer, that you passivate your equipment when you get it.
Absolutely.
And then you're fine. but that's not really true.
You should always do that when you first get new stainless, or else it's going to rust. That's okay. Why people do it.
Okay.
And then usually people that have their, you know, due diligence on their brew house, they do it every quarter or
I
whatever.
See.
And what we do is we don't do a full high dose passivation every brew. But we do use nitric acid on every cycle.
Okay.
It helps neutralize your caustic, too.
Yeah.
So, I see.
So neutralize the caustic, keep the stainless shiny, you know, any kind of stone, build up deposits, you're going to wipe that out. We don't have hard water anyway up where we're at, you know, in Rockland. But
okay.
Let's say if you were in, you know, San Diego or L.A. in certain pockets. I mean, I've been in brew houses before, and you just see the white all over the stainless or all over, you know,
yeah.
equipment. And that's usually, you know, deposit that's coming from, you know, calcium buildup or,
okay.
or alkalinity, you know, calcium carbonate. So we it's just something that I've always known and learned that you want to kind of neutralize that
yeah.
continually. And you're getting the caustic off, because caustic is a
yeah.
you know, slimy kind of substance, and it can stick to stuff, and it can get in your beer too. So
it's like waxing your car.
Totally.
And more sorry for all the car analogies, but seriously, you can tell a person who's like you two and really cares about all that, they're going to wax their car every 3 months like you're supposed to, and you park my car next to that car and you can tell the difference.
You know mine, what I mean? Too, dude.
Yeah, you can tell.
Like Zach's car looks like hot shit.
Well, we don't have time to take care of our cars.
Yeah.
What's a car anymore?
But you take care of the brewery like it's a Ferrari.
Absolutely.
And by the way, if I owned a Ferrari, it would get all the waxing and all the oil changes and all the everything.
Totally.
Your brewery's more expensive than a Ferrari, so this makes sense.
Yes,
I'm making a point on this, I think, for other brewers out there, because, yeah, treat your brewery like a Ferrari.
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah. Okay.
So we came in, cleaned it up, got it up to snuff as much as we could, but, like, first brew day was fine. It wasn't like some glorious brew day, but it was good. It was a long day. We had some like CO2 issues and like, you know, like any issue you'd have, like new system. But ultimately, like batch one was pretty good.
Okay.
But there was little things that we did like have to do maintenance on and tweak. And we're still, I mean, any brewer or brewery is going to say like you never stop tweaking or changing whatever it is, equipment, recipes, whatever. You know,
yeah.
You never rest on your laurels. You always want to make, you know, the best beer possible.
Make it better.
So,
yeah.
So,
all right. I have to ask about the name, if you guys don't mind, too.
Yep.
So now you buy the brewery. Don't even know if you had a name at that point. You choose Shred, and I have to ask this. You used to work for a brewery called Slice that we talked about. You know, Slice and Shred, they're a little similar. Like I always wondered. And we've known each other for a couple of years now. I've always wanted to ask, was it like a fuck you to Slice? Like, oh, okay, fine. I'll be Shred then. That was always, I just always have wondered this question.
It totally was. Not.
No, not at all. Not
it
at
wasn't.
All.
Okay.
No.
Not at all.
And I kind of thought that was the answer, but always in the back of my mind, there just was this little nagging thing like, but they're kind of, I don't Shred Slice. I don't know if it was a middle finger. It wasn't. Go on. Where does the name come from then?
So when we were thinking of brewery names, obviously there's so many that's are already taken.
Yeah. It's also hard to do.
Exactly. We found ourselves with our kids, because the boys were into skateboarding, like saying Shred all the time.
Nice.
And then I grew up in SoCal, him in NorCal. So what does California have to offer? You know, you can be surfing and snowboarding or skateboarding or shredding on a guitar at any moment,
you know,
within an hour. And that was kind of our thought on that.
I like it.
It encompasses like California. Like I skate and snowboard a lot. I think it was just something that we found ourselves saying a lot, like kind of like goobery, like lame. We would like joke about like, oh yeah, Shred this and Shred that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, we just like, you know, like, wow, like, what's the name of our brewery going to be? Like, this is like so lame. And I think we were like just like joking, like Shred, like one day about something. Like, oh yeah, let's just call
like,
it that.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it works. And from a purely like branding marketing perspective, I really like it. I didn't love it at first, but I've noticed as I get older that I'm shittier at noticing when names are good. I did this with Liquid Gravity too. They asked me my advice. I was like, that's terrible. I love it now. It's a great name. I didn't think your guys was terrible. I just was like, I don't know. I don't know about this. But as I've seen the brand grow, had the beer, talked with you guys, seen your logos on shirts and things, I think you made a really good decision. I think it works. Simple, right? Like just and like you said, it's California. People might ask why you came up with it, but no one has to ask what it means.
Exactly.
Right. There's nothing I like less than a brewery where I have to ask what it means. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Keep it simple, yeah.
I'm trying to think of the one. They're gone now, so if I can think of it. It's so unmemorable because nobody knew what it meant. I'll think of it before the end of the show. But it was just like a nonsense word. And I'm like, no, just don't do that. We're not tech here. Like, don't come up with, like, hoopla, boogaloo. Like, just come up with a word that everybody knows. And it kind of fits beer to me. Just because it's got a cool, like, edge to it, right? So
it's simple. It's one word, yeah. You know. And there's a lot of other, I mean breweries that I like a lot that have really, like, long phrases or terms in their beer names or their name themselves. And it's a mouthful, you know. We just, like, keep it really simple. And
shred.
Yeah. It's California-based brewery, you know.
I also like that you took the rest of the words, you took the simple version, too. It's not Shred Brewing Company or Shred Beer Factory or all that. It's just Shred Beer Co. Right. Shred Beer Company. Mm-hmm. Yep. Just go with Beer Company. Yeah, so I think you made some good decisions on that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, nicely done. Let's talk about the beer in our glass, which I believe is called Aroma Spider.
Yeah.
Is that what you're... West Coast IPA?
Yep.
Tell me about the beer.
So, West Coast IPA, we designed this beer and did like a kind of a collab with Yakima Chief Hops. So, they donated hops for this beer, which was awesome. They put in a significant amount of the inventory in this beer, which, you know, as you know, hops are bread and butter.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, just speaking of that really quick, I have your website open. I wanted to mention that. I'm not cutting us off. It's on this topic. I went to your beer list. I'm just going to list off the styles. Right, here we go. Ready? Fest beer. West Coast Pilsner. West Coast Double IPA. Hazy IPA. Hazy IPA. West Coast Double IPA. Imperial Stout with coffee and Vermont maple syrup. Session IPA. West Coast IPA. Cold IPA. Hazy Double IPA. Petite Fruit Sour with Passion Fruit and Guava. West Coast IPA, German Style Pilsner. Hazy IPA, West Coast IPA. And I think that's everything on tap right now.
Right.
I'm not making fun here. I wasn't always. I'm now an IPA person. Like the rest of the craft beer world, this is a smart move on your part. But you guys are all in on it. Like, clearly, you're hop lovers, is absolutely. I guess what I'm
absolutely.
Saying.
Absolutely. And it's what sells.
Yeah, yeah.
And as you see on the list, we do offer things for people that don't love hops.
Yeah, totally. And you sort of, at least you have to do that. Yes. Otherwise, you get made fun of that even
absolutely.
For that. But I'm saying you're just making the beer that you love is what it seems like to me. Clearly, it's what sells, but it's what you guys love.
We do love it.
All right, so back to Aroma Spider. Hops in this beer?
Yeah, so let me try to remember this one. I don't know if it's on the... I think our website might need a little refresh, but let me think here. Nectaron Cryo, Nectaron Simcoe,
okay.
Mosaic 702, 586, 586 Cryo. I'm pretty sure that's the hop bill. Yeah.
For those of you at home, Zach's looking at a glass of beer as if he's reading the label. But that's how your brain works, right? Like, you can see it in your mind, but he's holding the glass in front of him, reading it off of an empty glass. Well, it's full of beer, but it has no label on it.
Yeah, there's no writing on this. I'm just sensory 101.
I love that, though. That's how your brain works. That's an incredible hop bill.
Yeah, yeah.
And what was your goal with that hop bill? Because you could have used less. What were you going for here?
I think we were, obviously, like, collab with YCH, we were going for high impact flavor and aroma, and we wanted something that was going to kind of encompass a lot of, like, and I'm sure you and people that are listening have seen, like, that, you know, aroma flavor, like, wheel or, like, spider graph that shows all those, like, different directions, you know, of, like, what a hot, like, you know, you see, like, Simcoe, and it's, like, catty and, like, tiny, you know, and then you see Citroen, it's like, you know, tropical and like this and that. So we were like kind of like making the play or joke off this with the YCH guys, like, what if we just have this like aroma spider type beer with all these crazy hops you guys want to donate? And they're like in all these rad directions. And then we put our own like sensory like descriptions on the flavor wheel. So like if you ever look at that can
label,
you
gotta look at the can at our points.
It's okay, like, okay. You know, instead of like catty and like tropical, it's like rad, groovy, dank. Like,
nice.
But I mean, I'm encompassing maybe like a lot of new school elements that like YCH is bringing to the table now, because like, you know, NZ Hops and YCH are doing, you know, a lot of New Zealand hops now. Like they kind of came together in the last year. And then, you know, 586 is like still a new hop with a number, you know, back to like Rogers Pale Ale, like, you know, that one gold. Like, I mean, that's a rad hop.
Beautiful hop.
A lot of people that we respect use that hop. Awesome. And so it's got like the cryo element. It's got the T90 element. It's got, you know, Nectaron and Nectaron Cryo. It's got like really dope Simcoe, you know, that we have on, you know, selection contract this year.
Nice.
It's got some Mosaic 702 Flowable, which is like a new YCH product. So it's got some really cool, fun, exciting, different hops that's not just like Mosaic and Citra, you know?
Sure. Well, and not only that, though, when you get into that, it, at least in the old days, all that could turn to mud, too. Like, just like a muddy.
Oh, yeah.
So one thing I said to you guys, right, I think I took a taste off air and was like, oh, it's like super piney. But as I taste it, I could almost pick out any sort of pine, earth, and tropical flavor, and I'm not wrong about any of them. Like, no one could tell me that they're not there. So it is, but it's also not muddy. I can still pick out the pine right now, and now I'm also picking up, like, melon. There's obviously tons of, like, tropical flavors and aromas in there. But every one of them you could pinpoint, like, throughout the process of drinking the beer, which I think is dope and hard to do. That's kind of what I'm certainly complimenting you on that.
Yeah,
because
cool.
a lesser brewer putting all those things together, I think it's hard to make any of them stand out.
To a mud factory.
Yeah. So I don't know how you do that, but you did a nice job of it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's danky, too. On top of all that, it's still danky.
Yeah. It's got some good complexity for sure. Uh-huh. You know, a big fan of Nectaron in the last couple of years and 586 and taking kind of their cryo counterparts. And then we just have this, some really rad Simcoe right now. Just amazing really Simcoe. Yeah. I mean, this is like our new Simcoe. Just
love that.
Killing it. So, yeah, it's a nice complex kind of blend going on.
All right. Well, we've got more beer to try. And I've got more questions about beer and certainly about hops. I want to talk about, like, you're saying how you got this, like, selection of Simcoe. And I want to talk about that because I was giving some people some advice at the World Beer Cup about brewers that you see up there over and over again. And so, and through my interviews, some consistencies I've noticed. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to school you through Shred. Hang in there. It's the session. We'll be right back.
Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Their website features real-time inventory, which means if you can put it in your cart, they can guarantee it'll ship the same day by 4 p.m. on weekdays. Want easy and simple electric brewing? Check out the new Series 2 Mash and Boil, featuring an elevated grain basket so you don't have to calculate sparge water. Williams also features the full Kegland line, everything from Brewzilla to Maltzilla, and a huge selection of duo-tight fittings. Looking for a kegerator? Look no further than the Kegland Series X and Plus kegerators, which feature 4 and 8 keg capacity in a compact footprint, and free shipping to the lower 48. Interested in distilling? Look up their proven Williams American Bourbon and Brandy kits, as well as complete distilling equipment packages and conversion kits for popular systems like the Mash and Boil, Anvil, and the Grainfather. Check them out today. Go to williamsbrewing.com to browse their vast selection.
Welcome back to the session. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. Glad to be back in the studio with my friends from Shred. We got Amy Heller and Zach Frasher here. And we're still talking beer and we're still tasting beer. And I promised you before the break that through Shred, I would help you learn about being an award-winning brewer. I don't know that I've ever lived up to that claim, so we'll see if that works now, too. But I was saying to folks recently, because I've been doing the awards for so long, you know, you see, like, repeated winners up there. You know, you guys, back in the day, it was like Firestone was up there, Ghost Town's there all the time right now. And I don't have all the insight into that, but one thing I was saying to brewers this week at the Craft Brewers Conference is that on my show over the last couple of years, one consistency I've heard in the award-winning categories is we go to hop selection. Like, if I ask people, what's different about your hops? What's different about your beer? Why are you winning? A consistent answer is going to, like, selecting your own hops instead of just buying them on the spot market. Kind of takes you from, our beer's good, to, holy shit, did you taste that beer? Like, that's always, to me, the difference between award-winning beer or, like, people... I'm going to go off on a little side note here. Some brewers will ask me, like, well, why does this brewer get all the hype? Why does Ghost Town get all the hype? Why does Shred get all the hype? And I'm like, well, it's not just hype, I'll tell you that. It's a beer that there are plenty of beers that we serve here and that I like just fine. But you just heard me say, I like them just fine. That's different than, holy shit, have you tried Zach and Amy's beer? And anyhow, I would like to know some differences from you. But to me, one of them in the last couple years has been, we go to hop selection and we pick those damn things ourselves. Your thoughts. Now let's see if I get to teach anybody anything out of my experience.
I'll let you start a little bit. Go ahead.
Yeah, we do a virtual selection because we're super new still, and we have had the opportunity to go up and actually do selection, but we do virtual.
First, to make fun of myself, what you're saying is you've never gone to hop selection.
Never.
So I'm out there. Never. Strike one, Justin.
Never.
Strike one. But what is virtual hop selection? What does that mean?
So, I mean, I'll just say, even like just a few days ago in Vegas, we did selection with the Ghost Town guys in the hotel room.
Oh, nice.
With some flour. So I'm not going like up and hanging out there and getting all the lots I should or we should be getting.
But you get sent lots.
Totally.
Okay. Yeah.
And so we do, you know, select that way. And then like with freestyle hops, like New Zealand, we'll get actually, which I think are better, like...
Yeah, we prefer...
The finished goods.
Yeah, pellets.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not the flowers. It's like you're getting actually the final of what you would actually be ordering on.
Because most hop selection takes place at the flower level before it's pelletized. Is that what you're
typically
saying?
Typically, yeah.
I see.
Yeah,
okay.
You're going to fly out wherever you're going. You're going to rub flowers and then, you know, they're going to pelletize and then... In my experience back at Moonraker, you know, we've had stuff that, like, cool, we're going to rub some flour, and then it was always virtual, but, you know, we rub these, you know, flowers, and then we get it, and then we're like, oh, these are the pellets. This is different. Not what we thought it was
totally
going to be.
Different.
Ah, cool. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you get pellets, like, straight from freestyle is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Which is rad.
Yeah. So at that point, though, I'm just thinking of the technicalities of that. Are you still picking a lot? Or that, because you are, okay. That's still a lot of hops that they send you in a pellet.
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah. All right.
Yeah, so go ahead. So,
our favorite thing to do, though, is just to collab with other breweries.
Okay.
And there's been many times that we, like Justin at Ghost Town, we try a beer, and it has this banging mosaic in it. Justin, what lot are you using? We want to get some of that. And then we just ask for that lot.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll do selection, you know, like so we contract for like Nelson, right, from Freestyle. And we'll get, you know, lots that are T90s, you know, pellets and that's a kind of our selection game. But like let's just say Mosaic, Simcoe, Citra, like we could select, but we didn't even do it this last year. But like Amy said, we'll be like, hey, Justin, Ghost Town, what is your dopest Mosaic lot right now? And he'll be like, oh, it's this lot number because it's fucking dank as fuck.
Yeah, know? Yeah, yeah.
And we're like, all right, that's the one we're going to go. We're going to ask for, you know.
Right.
And so we play that game instead. And we've been doing this actually for a while.
Such great luck. Because
so to me, that's
that.
The same as hop. You're selecting specific hops.
It's trickery hop selection, mm-hmm. because like, there's a different like thought process. You go up to like Yakima, right? And you go have a blasty blast and you drink beer all day and you're selecting flowers and you're like getting fatigued and you're like, okay, I just rubbed, you know, 20 different citralots. You would never do that much, but. About I rubbed like six different citra lots, and like, okay, I don't know what citra I want right now because I just rubbed fucking Simcoe before this,
right?
And like, I don't know what's what now, and like, I don't know what Centennial smells like anymore. You know, like everything's getting all mixed up and weird.
Yeah.
And so you come back home and you feel like, you know, you feel pretty progressive, like you know you did something, you had a good time. But then you get your shit in the mail and you're like, oh man, this like beer doesn't smell the way it should.
Right.
And so we actually play like the reverse game is when we hang out with people, like we'll already kind of get our pre-selection stuff done, usually T90 or whatever that we can do with New Zealand stuff.
Okay.
But even for what we have on contract, we won't select. But when we hang out with people, I'm like, hey, whoever brewery, you know, doing a collab with, or we're trying their beer, like I can smell a beer from across the room if it's 100% Mosaic, and I'm like,
yeah,
so I'm in love with this Mosaic. If it's not a blend of Mosaics, but if this is the one,
yeah,
you tell me what it is, and then I just hit up my YCH people or whoever, you know, whoever my
for
broker is,
lot.
And I'm like, I want all of this lot right now.
Yeah,
and we're trying it in the finished product.
Right,
you know,
right.
Like it's in the beer. That's what we're smelling. Not
exactly.
Y'all might be giving away too good of a tip here.
I know. Okay, can we delete this?
I know. We have to go back and edit this out for your sake, because this, what a great hack. So you're still selecting. So anyway, I just want to point out, listeners, I was right. They're still selecting, but you guys are like hacking selection in a really smart way. I feel like
you get the beer. And the beer's dope, right?
Yeah.
That's all that matters at the end.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
This is the final form of the hop that you're ever going to get, ever, no matter what happens.
Sure.
So you try a beer from your favorite brewery, one of your favorite breweries or friends, and you're like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Cool. You know? I mean like Row 2 Hill 56 Simcoe. Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Buy that
totally. Yeah, that is a Simcoe.
Deal.
You want the Peralt Simcoe?
Yeah,
you know, Vinny. You know, just Peralt. That's the thing. You know, you want that Simcoe. Like that is it right there.
That was my first beer today. Yeah. Okay. So I love this. This is a great hack of selecting. And I've been telling because there you see consistent winners up there, and it's no. For years we've been saying that winning these awards is a crapshoot. It's not a crapshoot, right? I'm sure you guys entered some perfectly delightful fucking beers that didn't make it. But how can you say it's entirely a crapshoot when you see the same people up there on stage year after year, right? So there's some of these techniques. Is there anything else that you guys attribute to some of your award-winning beers?
I think just, you know, did you want to say
that?
Okay. I was going to say... I think just consistency and having really strong SOPs is something like being a technical brewer and having a process-driven brewery. You know, you can be creative. You can have really good hop varieties and XYZ. And good marketing is another element of like making good beer, right? People drink with their eyes, you know. But I think that having just really clean, sterile, perfectly made beer, as much as you can make it that way, can go a long way.
Okay.
Instead
of just like flying by the seat of your pants, or hey, I know this brewery in and out, so I don't have to read the SOPs, you know, just really having specific guidelines all the way through.
Totally.
Yeah.
And so like when I was at Knee Deep in 2011, you know, there was things that I learned there that I felt were the way to make really good, clean, sterile beer. And I took that And I put my twist on it at every brewery I went to as the evolution of time went on with how you make beer and the way people, you know, perceive make. But some of those SOPs are pretty hard piped and grained in general. But they always get tweaked, you know.
Sure.
And so it's like you have this process. Oh, okay, I see that process, but I can do that maybe better than that. Mm-hmm. Okay, now we've done this for a year now. You know what? Actually, I can do that maybe two or three times better than that in a different way.
Right.
And you just kind of learn things and these little secrets and like concepts to making beer. And I think if you follow that and you really you care about making, you know, any kind of product, you know, if you're not even a brewer, you know, you're a baker, you're a butcher or something. You see raw materials, and you can take it in a different aspect or a different light every time.
Sure,
you should look at those opportunities on how to make a better quality product, and that's something I think that both me and Amy have like designed and developed over
Absolutely.
The years of brewing is that we're just like, hey, how can we make this better every time?
Well, and we're absolutely honest with each other too, and we try. We call this thing, like on Friday or Saturdays, pump and dump, where we get a bunch of beers from other breweries.
Oh, nice.
You know, and we just lay everything out. So we'll try all West Coast IPA, and we'll put our beers in there, too.
Yeah.
And we'll taste through everything multiple times, obviously not drinking all 10, but just trying and
sure.
having a conversation with each other. What do we like about each beer? What do we not like about something like, okay, this is our beer against it. How are we liking this?
Right.
Definitely developing your palate and always being honest with yourself about, you know, your beers and, you know, like you said, trying to make
everything
better.
That is a great practice to consistently do that.
Absolutely.
What do you do if you find, so you found a beer in your lineup of some West Coast IPA and it's a brewer you don't know personally? And you're like, oh, damn, okay. But you can't put your finger on what they did. Do you reach out? Do you guys ever just reach out blind?
In a good way or a bad way?
In a good way. In a good way. You're like, oh, man, this is so good.
It'll put them on our radar to where we're going to try more of their beers.
Okay, yeah, got it. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, there's been those moments that you try a beer and you're like, holy fuck, like these guys are making amazing beer.
Who is this? Where are they from? Oh, okay. Yeah, let's look for more.
It happens a little more often now than it used to, but it's still, I wouldn't call it often, right? So you want to know who they are.
Right.
Yes.
Or, the other turn, you know, a brewery that makes really, really good beer, and then you're like, or, you know, typically makes really good beer, and then you try the beer, you're like, oh, not so good, you know, maybe they should reevaluate their QAQC program, and It's so difficult because you're going off, you know, sometimes package stability and DOs and TPOs of a can that you got. And even if it's fresh sometimes, there's just
so many variables.
There's so many variables. Yeah.
Right.
I had this second job while I was up north before we started Shred, where I was working for a company that was using artificial intelligence to recommend sensory products to consumers.
Okay.
And I was doing their beer side. So I got to curate beer from all over. He would join in too.
Yeah, that's
just laying everything down and going through it. And
sensory is such an amazing part, I think, of a good brewer's process.
It is
to learn
so
that.
Important.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So important.
Yeah, to really understand where it's coming from, where these flavors are coming from. I think that, yeah. And again, there are brewers who are like, oh, my beer's good. You're right. It's good. It's just good.
Right. Yeah.
And it's fine. And there's plenty of brewers who are going to make a living like that.
True.
But specifically when people ask me about these, why are these brewers winning all the time and that, I'm like, there are these differences. Sensory, SOPs, consistency. Well, like that's another one. People will ask, why do you drink or talk about Altamont all the time? Because I've never had a bad Altamont beer. In fact, I've never had a less than exceptional Altamont beer, I think. They're just always great to me. I've never had a less than exceptional Russian River beer. And so these are the people I ask questions about, like, what do you, like I'm asking you, you know, what do you do? And I think you guys are right. Sensory, SOP, repetition, consistency. Just because you brew 85 different beer styles a year doesn't mean you shouldn't have consistency, right? Like it used to be that, oh, you're not a consistent brewer. And now I'm like, No, I think if you're really good, you brew 85 different styles and you have consistency. Would you agree?
I think 85 different, or whatever the number
not
is.
Not styles, but beers, you know what I mean?
Brands. New beers, yeah. But there, you know, definitely there are certain breweries that just, they found their niche and they can execute and run that beer program the way it should be in like hoppy beer, you know?
And
I could rattle off a bunch of breweries, you know, in the Bay Area or, you know, SoCal. But I think you mentioned a couple that I just, you know, I think they have it so dialed in and they make amazing beer.
Yeah.
You know, for sure.
That's exceptional beer. All right, let's talk about the beer in our glass, which, all right, I want to mess up this name. You guys should wait. You should wait for me to do it, though. Okay. And I should have brought in the can, because I wonder if it's the can I'm talking about. Cottonmouth Keefe.
Yeah.
Did you guys brew it for 420?
It's a mouthful. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Cottonmouth Keefe. Cottonmouth is one word, by the way, everybody, with a K. Cottonmouth Keefe. West Coast IPA that you brewed with Ism.
Yep.
Another brand new brewery. Tell us about this beer.
Yeah, so West Coast IPA. Let me try to stare at the crystal ball again, so you can tell me the hops.
Exactly.
I think we're doing Nelson Maui Sub Zero Hop Keef, Citra Cryo, Columbus Cryo.
Oh wow!
Yep.
Yeah.
What's Nelson Maui? This is the first I've heard that, I think.
Yeah, so it's like the so it's this is a product from Freestyle, and this is like their hop keef, but the Maui is something that they infused. I want to say with like, I think it has like some pineapple in it or like pineapple terpenes. I want to say, yeah. I'm pretty sure it's terpenes.
Terpenes sounds about right.
It's not very cryptic on like. It is very cryptic on exactly what's in there. It's just like you're going to get a bunch of pineapple out of it. So,
I get pineapple, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's dry as fuck.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That is a good dry.
So the shred way in general, they're all dry. The West Coast
super
IPAs.
Dry.
Yeah, everything's
dry. They are
dry.
All dry, but and maybe that's where the name comes from. So my buyer here, you guys know him, Lewis, who's great.
Oh, yeah.
He's great at what he does. And I don't always bring home beer from here. But when I do, I ask Lewis or Jason. And I asked Lewis, so how are the shred beers? And he's like, oh, they're all great. And is Cottonmouth the one with the VW bus on it?
Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to talk to you guys about that in a second. But I was like, hey, what about this one? He's like, that's a fucking fantastic beer. But he goes, but it's super, it's so dry that you might feel like you smoked weed.
Yeah.
And I think I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but that's basically what he said. He's like, it's a beer that makes you want another one, but it makes you want water in between.
I could almost see that, right?
Do you see what I'm saying?
Oh, totally.
It's like, it is so dry.
Drinking my own beer right now, I'm like, it's pretty fucking dry, dude.
Yeah. And which gives it a great... Is that how the name came from it? Like, did you name it after the final product?
No. I think it's too tough to do that because you have to create a label and marketing and everything.
Because it's perfect.
Yeah, no. I think we had Ian up and we were throwing names around. And I was like, how about Concentrated Keef? Because we're going to use the Maui Keef in it. And like a bunch of Nelson and fucking Columbus Cryo and all this, like, you know, these dank hops, you know, Citra Cryo.
Right.
And he's like, what about Cottonmouth Keef? And I'm like, ooh, I like that even better.
Good.
Like, it's a great name.
Yeah. Like kind of like Cottonmouth Kings, like you ever listen to that, like, you know, band back
then. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was a good name, and then...
it's a great beer.
And yeah, obviously, it's a 420 beer, so we made it, like, extremely dry and dank. But all of our beers, like Aroma Spider on the other spectrum, is super dry. It's, like, the same attenuation.
Okay.
These beers are, like, both finishing at, like, 1.5, 1.6 Palito.
Okay.
So they're both bone dry.
Yeah.
Very similar grist. Different Pilsner malts in each of these, but... dry hopping regimen's the same, you know, hop kettle additions are about the same. The difference with the keef is like we did put, you know, this like keef stuff in with dry hopping. So it's probably giving some more, you know, interpretation of IBUs or just hops in general. Plus a bunch of Columbus Cryo, which to us throws like a more of like a IBU intensity, which might be kind of like drying out the palate a little bit more.
Okay. That makes sense.
I mean, but who knows, you know.
Mm. It's such a good beer.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. But yeah, it just makes you thirsty for beer and water. So
that's a good thing.
With the can, here comes my only criticism of your entire company so far. But it, you can probably just deflect it back to me because I think it's an old guy criticism. I love me some VW buses. I have one tattooed to my body. Oh, yeah, I own one. So seeing the can right away, I'm like, all right. I can't read the fucking font. And I'm trying to, literally, I'm trying to buy it from my own establishment. And the way we do cans, we don't have a scanner. You start punching in the name and the beer pops up. I just stare at the thing for like a minute. And it wasn't until I put together the whole, I was like, okay, Keefe, I think it's a 420 beer. And then I'm like, okay, cotton. So I did it by association. This is not your fault. I think it's my fault.
Oh, no. It's,
but it's my. Yeah. I think all of your branding is cool. I obviously love all your beer. I really enjoy the two of you. So if this is my one complaint, I think we're doing okay. None of these beers, you're not the only ones. When these beers come in, Ghost Town does it a bunch too. When I can't read the fucking font, I'm like, whose idea that this is good marketing? And anyway, I'm sorry to put that on you, but you can answer the question if you want.
I'm going to say we definitely have felt the same way.
Yes. Okay.
Sometimes.
Yeah. There was another beer we did that had a similar font that same thing.
But maybe we're just too old if we're complaining about it. I don't know. Can maybe the kids read it? I don't know.
I don't know.
Not the kids, you know what I mean? The 21-year-old.
That's what we call them, too.
Yeah. The kids, we're allowed to do that now, right?
Yes.
Anybody like 30 and under are the kids.
Yeah, once you get to this age, you call them the kids. Right? Especially when they're drinking like 20 hazies.
Yeah, know? Right. You're like, oh, the kids are out tonight.
We love our designer. He's rad. He puts awesome artwork together. There's a couple times that we're like, oh man, it's a little tough to read sometimes,
right?
And you know what? We just float it because he does such good work. I don't want to like.
I think you should. I think you honestly that I'm being serious when I say that maybe I'm just too old. If I were you and I have this great designer who's always nailing it, I would also float it. I would just be like, you probably know something I don't. It's okay.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, and then he comes through on other labels that are like so good, and that label fucking rips. It's so good. But I agree with you. It took me and her, and this happened on another label too, that he did with a very similar font, and we're like, oh, it's sick. But if I didn't know what it said, I couldn't read it. Like,
right?
Yeah, I know it's
that. But maybe, and here's where again, maybe they know more than us. The kids might be able to read it or just like it, even if they can't. But maybe it doesn't matter. The bus is so dope, and it tells me what the beer is in very clear writing. That's one thing you guys do. West Coast IPA, hazy IPA,
right?
Sour is in big. So there's a bunch of beer we sell here that doesn't do that either, and that drives me more crazy than not reading the name.
So what we do with our cans is we have on the front, you know, like the main logo and name, and then there's usually our logo as well, our logo, main name, and the beer style. And then we always have a sidebar on every beer.
I love that.
That kind of tells you, again, just in case you didn't really understand the front, here's what's going on the side.
Yeah.
And then for our own marketing's sake, we always have this sidebar right there.
See, I think that's
every
brilliant.
Can. Yeah.
So you guys know There Does Not Exist.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I love them.
Oh, they make awesome beer.
I love their beer. I now love their brand, but I fucking hate buying their beer. I love it when I buy. So now I just grab it. I'm like, all right, I'll just take it. I know I'm going to like it, but they don't. So that's their thing. And I think that their marketing knows more than I do. I love that yours has those panels where I even if I can't read it, I know what it is. Well, I know that it shred because you have that panel.
Totally. No, thank you. We definitely try to make it a little more obvious versus like, man, there's breweries on the East Coast that are making like hazy IPA and I don't know what I'm reading. You know, I don't know what's going on. we'll get from Crowlers and stuff and like some of these like amazing beer, right? But they show up and I'm like, what is this?
Yeah.
I don't even know how to read this. Like the label's badass.
Right.
Sick label. You know, whoever designed this, super talented.
Great artist.
The beer is amazing. Who knows what the fuck I'm drinking right now?
Well, but there's, you know, beers even around here that just say IPA. And I pour it.
Yeah.
And it's hazy. I don't want a damn hazy. I want a clear beer.
Yes.
And it pisses me off.
Just tell me. Just tell me what it is.
I just want to know what I'm getting into.
So some of you are so good at it, and the grocery stores are not. Original Pattern. They always put hazy IPA, IPA.
Oh, yeah.
I went to wine, whatever it's called. It's the other BevMo. Picked up what said double IPA, actually, from Original Pattern. Get to the register, and, you know, it shows you on the screen what it is, and it said double hazy IPA on the screen. And I was like, fuck. I'm about to buy a, you know, $22 four-pack of a beer I don't want. But I was so confident in my dudes at Original Pattern that they labeled their beer properly and that the store was wrong that I went through with it. And sure enough, I get home and it's a nice and perfectly clear double IPA.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good, 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 good.
So I'm doing these conversations on the show more and more lately because I think I'm going to almost single-handedly get brewers to label their beers better. I'm okay if I can't read the name. I'm going to make fun of you for it like I just did.
Oh, all good. Yeah,
but
yeah.
I'm not okay if I can't read the style.
Totally. Yeah.
That's where I draw the line. All right. Well, we got one more beer to try. Do you guys want to play a little game with me? It's just my like random question game. It's personal stuff. Like not too personal, but it's not about beer.
Here we go.
You just got to answer stuff about like what's your favorite movie, bullshit like that, while we taste another one. What do you think? Are you down?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. What's your favorite guilty pleasure beer? Meaning it doesn't make you look cool. It might not be a crap beer. Like, I don't know what.
That's so easy.
Go on.
Modelo Especial.
I'm with you on that.
That is my favorite.
It's it, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good. In fact, in Vegas this week, when all else fails,
exactly.
Modelo Especial.
Put a little lime in it. So good.
Good answer. Zach, do you got a favorite guilty pleasure beer that's not Modelo?
Oh, shit. I drank a lot of Modelo.
What is this beer, by the way? Tell us this beer while Zach's thinking.
Oh, so Orange Bloom Hazy IPA. This is Citra Amarillo.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Okay. What did I see? 7% or
so
on there?
7.5%.
Okay. Oh, that's nice. Got that pillowy hazy thing happening.
It does have the pillowy going on.
But it's also,
definitely.
Is it dry or is it my mouth still dry? I think it's dry.
It's pretty hoosy, dude.
Is it? Well,
I think this finished at like 5 Play-Doh.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not dry.
Mm-hmm. It's the cottonmouth, baby.
It's the cottonmouth, yeah. Finishes very dry.
Okay. Guilty pleasure beers, Zach? You think of it?
Ah, man. Well, I love Modelo, but I'll just say like, maybe like PBR or something. I don't know. Like I'll drink like any kind of like Hams PBR.
Sure.
You know, Rainier, which we don't even get around here. But like any kind of beer like that, you know, like just go to the river, turn it off. I'm just drinking the drink. I'm not thinking
about
beer.
Hydration, yeah. Really.
Yeah, exactly.
At that point. Yeah. Okay. I guess this is a joint question since you guys are together. If you could retire wealthy tomorrow, like I just like you win the lottery tonight. So you wake up tomorrow and you're like, well, where would you live? Where would you want to live? You guys have a favorite place?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
Talked about
so you, do you have a lot of favorite places? Oh, you have. I like it when people talk about it. They have.
Where do you want to go?
You could give me if you have a top three, I don't know. What was the first place that popped in your mind, Amy?
I mean, I love the West Coast. Okay. I don't know if I'd stay in California. I'd probably be Oregon. Maybe, but I don't know.
You've lived in Oregon before?
No, but I've traveled there a lot.
It's great to travel.
It's very beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, if she wants to go to Oregon, then I'm going to Oregon.
Attaboy. Okay. In your opinion, Zach, who is the best band in the world, past or present? They don't have to be alive, but you got to tell.
God.
First one that comes to your mind, like best band in the world. I hope it's like Duran Duran. I hope he like totally surprises
Jesus
me.
Christ. Man, that is such a loaded question.
I know. But just give us an no one's going to hold you to it.
Pink Floyd, baby.
All right, that's a good one to pop in your head.
Love Pink Floyd, dude.
Dude, The Wall is probably my number two favorite album
Number two is good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Second place, Silver.
Yeah.
Love Pink Floyd.
Pink Floyd's great. I think David Gilmour just came out with a new album for the first time in like 20 years or something. But yeah. All right. That's a good answer.
Okay.
Amy, if you were to get a tattoo today, like my girlfriend's literally a tattoo artist, as you know.
That's right.
And she's on her way to visit us.
So we were
if she were to bring her needle with her, what would you get?
A rose.
A rose.
Another
you
rose.
Have a beautiful rose already.
I have.
Yeah. That's
the sleeve
nice.
I'm working on.
So, oh, it's still working. It looks great already.
Oh, it's been a work in progress.
How long?
I started this in 2017.
Okay. So
it's been a little while.
See, I'm like you like that. There's these people who just sit through it.
I can't afford it.
Oh,
that's
too.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Like this first one, it took 8 hours.
And $800. More, okay.
Probably more.
Yeah. And then my artist is down in Ventura.
Okay,
so
yeah.
Since I moved, it's just harder to get back down there. But yes, it would be a rose.
Okay. All right. Are either of you superstitious?
Not really.
I walk she under might ladders be, yeah. all the time. It's
so no. Okay. I'm waiting for a really superstitious person for that question. If your food is bad in a restaurant, Zach, do you tell them? Do you send it back or do you sit through it? And I don't mean like raw or like going to make you sick. You know what I mean? Like they did something wrong, not as advertised.
Do you
do you speak up or do you just
kind of bogus?
Yeah.
Like I'm not going to die, but.
Yeah, no, there's nothing wrong with it. Yeah. It's just not what, you know.
Not good.
Do you tell them?
Typically, I'll probably just eat it and never go back.
Yeah.
Typically.
That's what I do.
I mean, it really depends. let me say this.
It does depend.
Let me say this.
Okay.
If the service sucks too, then I'll say something.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll be like, yo, this is a double whammy of dog shit right now.
Okay, that makes sense. I like the caveat because that makes sense.
Yeah. If it's really good service.
Yeah.
And I'm given something I'm not into, and it's okay. I can stomach it down, unless it's just terrible. I'll stomach it, but yeah.
Okay.
These questions.
I know. Amy, what was your first car?
Oh,
as
goodness.
You guys know, I'm a car guy.
Yeah. It was, I can't remember the year, but it was a Toyota Camry.
And do you remember how old you were? Like, are we talking 16 years
16.
Old? First car? Okay.
I was 16.
Back when we all got our licenses when we were 16?
I know. I can't believe the kids nowadays.
They don't do that.
These, like, 23-year-olds. Oh, I don't have my license yet.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't want it.
It blows my mind.
Yeah. My nephew didn't get it till 18, and the other kids don't get it till they're 20. It's so weird, right?
It's weird.
Very much so.
Toyota Camry. What was yours, Zach? What was your first car?
Mazda 626.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. A little sporty.
Not bad. Yeah. I wanted a Honda Accord or Civic. I can't remember, but the 626 was cheap and it was ready to rock. So.
There you go. What's your, if I forced you to, I always have to say that because then you can't answer, I don't ever do it. Zach, what's your go-to karaoke song?
He would never do karaoke.
First of all, have you never?
I mean, I've done karaoke. I can't even.
This is what I'm saying. If we're forcing you to, what are you going to pick?
Oh, man. Put me on the spot. Let me think here.
Amy, you better think about the same thing because this is a double question.
I don't know. any Journey song.
Yes!
There we go, right? Isn't that karaoke driven,
heck
right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and you get a good crowd reaction. Yeah. You don't even have to sing it well because they'll sing it with you.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah.
Good answer.
It's funny.
All right, Amy, here's one for you. A little deeper here, but what's a habit you have today that you picked up from your parents, like one or both of them. And it could be a good habit. It could be a bad habit. I don't care. But just something like, oh, I'm my parents. Like when you do that thing, you know, and you can think about it for a second. I can throw another one at Zach because I know that one's a little deeper. But don't you like sometimes to think about like I said, good or bad?
I mean, I definitely got my work ethic from both my parents, to be honest.
Okay.
Like, my dad was a workaholic. My mom as well. I remember being like, why are you working so much? Why? You know.
And before you knew it, you were that, too.
Totally.
That's a good enough answer. That's a good answer. I got my work ethic from my stepdad. He pretty much raised me, too. He was great, and I love him very much, but partly because he was an asshole about it. He's like, go out there and do something all the time. Like, get out there and do it.
So what do you got to do it?
I know. I was kind of a lazy kid. And nowadays, people are like, wow, you really work a lot. And I'm like, yeah, well, thanks to my dad. You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, he did that. Okay. Zach, before you discovered brewing, what was your dream profession? We already know it was not radiology. I don't know if as a kid or a teenager, you know, did you have a thing that you're like, oh, I'm gonna do that? If you're embarrassed about it, it's even better. He's like Chippendales.
Porn star.
yeah.
No, I don't think I really So before radiology, I went to school actually for my business degree, and I got about two semesters in, and that was great. That was not a dream though. That was just, you know, something that I thought I could do as well.
Sure.
But a dream job, I don't know, man. I mean, like, you know, like be like a fucking boxer or something.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking dream big here.
Yeah. I used to box and kickbox, so.
Okay, you know, so this is a real thing. Maybe a boxer.
Kick ass, you know, I don't know.
Nice. Yeah. Were you any good?
I mean, I won some shit when I was younger. Okay. But you know, I got older and I got my ass kicked and I got old, you know, so.
You're not like going back to it or anything.
Fuck no, yeah. Oh, maybe. Who knows?
You One know? Day.
You know.
Have you had your midlife crisis yet? Because you could
I'm
go 40, back.
I'm 40.
Oh, so you're right there.
Second wind's coming soon.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So, Amy, the brewery's going great.
Hey, by the way, you're going to run this. I'm going to go box now.
This new gym opened up down the road. It's all boxing. Oh, man. Amy, what's your most frequently used emoji?
Oh, the jazz hands.
Jazz hands. Oh,
I love jazz hands.
Because you're a happy person. I like that. Zach's is probably the opposite. Zach's like middle finger.
This is the...
Shred.
Yeah.
Rock fingers?
Yeah. All of them, yeah.
Rock fingers.
Yeah, rock fingers, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what you called it.
Yeah, rock fingers.
All right, last one. And it's for both of you. This one's tough. Sometimes people are like, oh, yeah. Do you have like a hidden talent? You know, and doesn't have to be like hidden for me. Like, no one knows that you know how to ride a unicycle. Like, that's kind of what I'm saying. Do you have any kind of a, I play the flute. Either one of you have like a thing?
It's not like a hidden talent. I do like DJing, like turntable stuff. That's not like hidden. Though,
okay. Yeah. I was hoping you were going to say like poetry. Okay. But like, so you DJ.
Yeah, I've been doing that for like 20 plus years, but I don't do it much anymore
because
of the damn brewery, but you know.
But that's good. So that's a hidden talent. Yeah, people don't know that about you.
Yeah.
They could be like, oh, we're going to a Zach party. Are you going to DJ?
Oh, yeah. So sometimes people come over, like industry friends, and I'm like, boom, turntables, and like,
oh, hell
they're
yeah.
Like, holy shit, yeah.
This is a great answer.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Often I get like, yeah, I don't know, I can make peas really good. This is a great answer. Yeah.
Amy, what's your hidden talent?
I have no idea.
Okay, all right.
No, I'm honestly so busy with the kids because we have a lot of kids, and the brewery and the business side of that. I have no time for anything. So
what about like when you're? And now I'm just going to push the issue for fun.
Yeah,
but
that's
like,
fine.
Were you in band in school or anything?
No.
Or
no.
Okay. Were you like on the debate team? Were you on the science team? Like
no. She wasn't. Let me say this. I already No. Well, it might not be like the best hidden talent explanation, but you make really good food.
I do. Yes.
Oh, okay.
She's like a little hidden chef. I don't have a lot of time for it.
Here we go.
Yes. Yeah. Even though I don't eat meat and I haven't ate meat in 37 years,
oh, wow.
I can still cook it very well better than most people.
She can almost do a kitchen in our kitchen, like a commercial kitchen in our kitchen.
This is a real answer. First of all, I would call not eating meat in 37 years a talent. That's difficult in America. And second of all, cooking, that's a talent. Okay. So you're just, I hear you. You're feeling like I don't have a lot of time to spend on this hobby, but you're clearly,
I do
sounds
miss
like
that
you're
hobby.
Good at
I
it.
I miss it.
But, and I don't mean just cooking. Yeah. I mean like chef level.
Chefing.
Quality.
Full on.
Yeah. She can bust out a plate. And I've been eating meat forever. She's vegetarian. She'll make food that's not meat that I'm like mind blown by.
Wow. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Okay, this is a real talent. So
it's a talent,
thank
right?
you for bringing this up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Very nice. All right, you two. We've done this for almost 2 hours, which is longer than most of my shows nowadays, which means we've been having fun. So thanks for being here and coming all the way down from Rockland and hanging out with us here.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. The beer's great. Even the hazy.
Even the hoose.
Well, you know what I mean by that.
Well, we absolutely
let me ask you, does it taste dry still after the cottonmouth? Is it?
I don't know. I got to go back to it. By the way, if you ever need a quote, Justin Crosley says, the beer's great, even the hazy.
Even the hazy. All right. We'll put that on the wall.
Well, it lives up to its orange bloom name. So I like that. It's very citrusy, right? As a good hazy is supposed to be. It's pillowy like it's supposed to be. And no, it's not super dry like I thought it was. It literally was the cotton mouth.
Yeah.
I probably should have started us with this.
Bong rips and then going to like, you know, water tastes, you know, dry.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, the aftertaste now is, it's almost mimosa. It's like so citrusy that it's almost mimosa. I have the dryness of cotton mouth and the citrus of this. It's like a mimosa.
Fuck it.
That's not bad.
Someone the other day in our tap room told me this tasted like really good bong water.
Oh, the Keef?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Is that a compliment? Okay. I don't know.
The Keef.
I'm like, I don't know how to take that. And they're like, it's a good thing.
Right. Yeah. Because everyone's like, that's horrible.
Like, I don't drink bong water, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. That must have been their way of saying, wow, how danky that beer is.
Yes,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, that'll be the beer I go back to, mostly because it makes me thirsty, but it's just so like danky and good.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah, that's nice. Mm. All right, you two. Folks at home, go to shredbeercompany.com. Their beer list is on there. Might not be perfectly up to date, but you can see what's happening. It's actually a great website. You got their story on there. You can learn about the beer. You can learn about the cans. There's even a little chat function that pops up. It's popping up right now asking me if I need any help. So that's nice. You can get through to them there. Go to, what did I say? Shredbeercompany.com and you can check it out there. Thank you again, guys, for being here with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. I could have let you do a Zoom interview, but I just didn't want to.
No,
I
thought this was way better.
Yeah.
Too easy.
So I appreciate it. Thanks again to our sponsors. Go to morebeer.com for bringing you this show. They do every single show that we do, and we appreciate it. Also, shop on Amazon through our links. Williams Brewing, Blickman, Beersmith, check them all out. Beersmith, I think it's 3.0 by now. Yeah, Beersmith 3 is out. Go to beersmith.com, check that out. It's free to try it on their web version, and you're going to love it. I know a bunch of pro brewers who still use it, so it's not just home brewers. Go to beersmith.com and get that. All right, I got a lot of shows coming up for you. I've got Doka Beer is coming on the show this week. Then I've got Faction and Ghost Town. They did a collaboration, so they're going to be on this week. So you're going to get a lot of new content from the Brewing Network and from a bunch of good brewers. All right, everybody, take care of yourselves and your beer. The Session is a production of the Brewing Network and brought to you by More Beer. Check them out at morebeer.com. Find more content and live video of this show on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/brewingnetwork. For sponsorship opportunities and information, please reach out to advertising@thebrewingnetwork.com. To reach our hosts,
Contact feedback@thebrewingnetwork.com.